here. If you were listening online prior to the start of this program, you know that we're going to be carrying the President's Address live through the facilities of MSNBC. And the President is just entering the chamber right now, so it's probably going to be a while. In the meantime, there's something that we'll get into a little bit more deeply tonight, I would imagine. This is reported at rawstory.com today. It's also reported by several news-gathering organizations. You're going to have a hard time with this one, I think. It kind of shocked me. Two of the three men arrested yesterday, along with Acorn pimp James O'Keefe, you know, the guy that made the video, 24-year-old guy that made the video, or 25, for maliciously tampering with Senator Mary Landrieu's phones in her New Orleans office. Two of the three have ties to the U.S. intelligence community. The three accused by the FBI of aiding and abetting the pimp, O'Keefe, are Stan Dye, D-A-I, remember that name, Stan Dye, Robert Flanagan, and Joseph Basil. O'Keefe is 25. The other three are all 24 years of age. Stan Dye's links to the intelligence community appear to be particularly strong. He was a speaker at Georgetown University's Central Intelligence Agency Summer School Program last June, and he's also listed as an assistant director at the Intelligence Community Center of Academic Excellence at Trinity College in D.C. The university's president told the Associated Press that it promoted careers in intelligence, but denied that it trained students to be spies. The Trinity program at Georgetown University, the Trinity program received $250,000 renewable grant from the U.S. Intelligence Agency when it was launched in 2004, according to its own website. The goals of this Trinity program at Georgetown University are, quote, the ICCAE, that's the name of the program, in National Security Studies program was established during 2005 in response to the nation's increasing need for professionals, intelligence community professionals, who are educated and trained with the unique knowledge, skills, and capabilities to carry out America's national security objectives. Now, the CIA, that's the end of the quote, the CIA summer school packet also notes that Dye, Stan Dye, served as the operations officer of the Department of Defense Irregular Warfare Fellowship Program. Dye has been an undergraduate fellow with the Washington-based national security think tank Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, FDD. Remember that one. FDD claims that it's partly funded by the U.S. State Department. Its leadership council and board of advisors comprise many high-profile conservative politicians and public figures, including former House Speaker Newt Gingrich, Senator Joe Lieberman, Weekly Standard editor William Kristol, Representative Eric Cantor, Republican of Virginia, former Bush official Richard Perle, and columnist Charles Krauthammer. Now, if you're keeping track, all of those people are Jewish with the exception of Newt Gingrich, and they have deep ties to Israel. Now, don't get your panties in a wad. I said the other night that six of the nine Supreme Court justices are Catholic. But this, I think you should take note. Dye, Stan Dye, one of the people busted, traveled to Israel for 2 weeks in 2004 on an FDD. Remember, that's Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, which sounds like an offshoot of the Project for New American Century. He traveled to Israel for 2 weeks in 2004 on an FDD-sponsored trip. All expenses paid. A host of FDD testimonials from academic fellows reveal that many fellows have traveled to Israel for training. The foundation says the course includes, quote, lectures by academics, diplomats, military and intelligence officials, and politicians from Israel, Jordan, India, Turkey, and the United States. FDD, the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, this is the Newt Gingrich, Richard Perle, right-wing organization. FDD proclaims that, quote, like America, Israel is at the forefront in the war on terrorism, end quote. Further explaining his interest in Israel, FDD declares, quote, both the United States and Israel are democracies and both face the same enemy. It is this connection between Israel's experience and the future of the United States that is the essence of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. All right. So clearly what they're saying here, it's an Israeli front organization. One FDD testimonial by one of the fellows, Dr. Cathal Nolan, highlighted this group's bond with high-level intelligence and government officials in Israel. This is what it says, quote, has it started? All right, we'll come back. Let's go to the President of the United States.
War and oppression. In moments of great strife and great struggle. It's tempting to look back on these moments and assume that our progress was inevitable, that America was always destined to succeed. But when the Union was turned back at Bull Run and the Allies first landed at Omaha Beach, victory was very much in doubt. When the market crashed on Black Tuesday, and civil rights marchers were beaten on Bloody Sunday, the future was anything but certain. These were the times that tested the courage of our convictions and the strength of our union. And despite all our divisions and disagreements, our hesitations and our fears, America prevailed because we chose to move forward as one nation, as one people. Again, we are tested. And again, we must answer history's call. 1 year ago, I took office amid two wars, an economy rocked by a severe recession, a financial system on the verge of collapse, and a government deeply in debt. Experts from across the political spectrum warned that if we did not act, we might face a second depression. So we acted, immediately and aggressively. And 1 year later, the worst of the storm has passed. But the devastation remains. 1 in 10 Americans still cannot find work. Many businesses have shuttered. Home values have declined. Small towns and rural communities have been hit especially hard. And for those who'd already known poverty, life's become that much harder. And this recession has also compounded the burdens that America's families have been dealing with for decades. The burden of working harder and longer for less. Of being unable to save enough to retire or help kids with college. So I know the anxieties that are out there right now. They're not new. These struggles are the reason I ran for president. These struggles are what I've witnessed for years in places like Elkhart, Indiana, and Galesburg, Illinois. I hear about them in the letters that I read each night. The toughest to read are those written by children, asking why they have to move from their home, asking when their mom or dad will be able to go back to work. For these Americans and so many others, change has not come fast enough. Some are frustrated. Some are angry. They don't understand why it seems like bad behavior on Wall Street is rewarded, but hard work on Main Street isn't. Or why Washington has been unable or unwilling to solve any of our problems. They're tired of the partisanship and the shouting and the pettiness. They know we can't afford it. Not now. So we face big and difficult challenges. And what the American people hope, what they deserve, is for all of us, Democrats and Republicans, to work through our differences, to overcome the numbing weight of our politics. For while the people who sent us here have different backgrounds, different stories, different beliefs, the anxieties they face are the same. The aspirations they hold are shared. A job that pays the bills, a chance to get ahead, most of all, the ability to give their children a better life.
All right, we're going to take a break. Stay with us. We'll continue to carry this on our internet stream. We'll be back right after the break with the State of the Union. I'm Mike Malloy.
Like she does. Will she
past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. Let's go right back to the State of the Union speech.
We cut taxes for small businesses. We cut taxes for first-time home buyers. We cut taxes for parents trying to care for their children. We cut taxes for 8 million Americans paying for college. I thought I'd get some applause on that one. As a result, millions of Americans had more to spend on gas and food and other necessities, all of which helped businesses keep more workers. And we haven't raised income taxes by a single dime on a single person. Not a single dime. Because of the steps we took, there are about 2 million Americans working right now who would otherwise be unemployed. $200,000 work in construction and clean energy. $300,000 are teachers and other education workers. Tens of thousands are cops, firefighters, correctional officers, first responders. And we're on track to add another 1.5 million jobs to this total by the end of the year. The plan that has made all of this possible, from the tax cuts to the jobs, is the Recovery Act. That's right. The Recovery Act, also known as the stimulus bill. Economists on the left and the right say this bill has helped save jobs and avert disaster. But you don't have to take their word for it. Talk to the small business in Phoenix that will triple its workforce because of the Recovery Act. Talk to the window manufacturer in Philadelphia who said he used to be skeptical about the Recovery Act until he had to add 2 more work shifts just because of the business it created. Talk to the single teacher raising 2 kids who was told by her principal in the last week of school that because of the Recovery Act, she wouldn't be laid off after all. There are stories like this all across America. And after 2 years of recession, the economy is growing again. Retirement funds have started to gain back some of their value. Businesses are beginning to invest again. And slowly, some are starting to hire again. But I realize that for every success story, there are other stories of men and women who wake up with the anguish of not knowing where their next paycheck will come from, who send out resumes week after week and hear nothing in response. That is why jobs must be our number one focus in 2010, and that's why I'm calling for a new jobs bill tonight. Now, the true engine of job creation in this country will always be America's businesses. I agree. Absolutely. But government can create the conditions necessary for businesses to expand and hire more workers. We should start where most new jobs do, in small businesses. Companies that begin when an entrepreneur, When an entrepreneur takes a chance on a dream or a worker decides it's time she became her own boss, through sheer grit and determination, these companies have weathered the recession and they're ready to grow. But when you talk to small business owners in places like Allentown, Pennsylvania, or Elyria, Ohio, you find out that even though banks on Wall Street are lending again, they're mostly lending to bigger companies. Financing remains difficult for small business owners across the country, even those that are making a profit. So tonight, I'm proposing that we take $30 billion of the money Wall Street banks have repaid and use it to help community banks give small businesses the credit they need to stay afloat. I'm also proposing a new small business tax credit, one that will go to over 1 million small businesses who hire new workers or raise wages.
All right, we have another break here. As the camera pans through the crowd, though, as you're watching this, keep an eye on John Boehner, Charles Grassley, these sourpuss rats that are sitting there while the president is trying to give his speech with the same dejected, nasty right-wing look on their faces. We'll be right back.
But though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. There will be an answer. Let it be.
The bill that ends up on my desk does not meet the test of real reform. I will send it back until we get it right. We've got to get it right.
This is the Mike Malloy Show. We're rejoining the State of the Union speech.
Last year, we made the largest investment in basic research funding in history. An investment that could lead to the world's cheapest solar cells, or treatment that kills cancer cells but leaves healthy ones untouched. And no area is more ripe for such innovation than energy. You can see the results of last year's investments in clean energy, in the North Carolina company that will create 1,200 jobs nationwide helping to make advanced batteries, or in the California business that will put 1,000 people to work making solar panels. But to create more of these clean energy jobs, we need more production, more efficiency, more incentives. And that means building a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power plants in this country. It means making tough decisions about opening new offshore areas for oil and gas development. It means continued investment in advanced biofuels and clean coal technologies. And yes, it means passing a comprehensive energy and climate bill with incentives that will finally make clean energy the profitable kind of energy in America. I'm grateful to the House for passing such a bill last year. And this year I'm eager to help advance the bipartisan effort in the Senate. I know there have been questions about whether we can afford such changes in a tough economy. I know that there are those who disagree with the overwhelming scientific evidence on climate change. But here's the thing. Even if you doubt the evidence,
Providing incentives for energy efficiency and clean energy are the right thing to do for our future, because the nation that leads the clean energy economy will be the nation that leads the global economy, and America must be that nation. We need to export more of our goods. Because the more products we make and sell to other countries, the more jobs we support right here in America. So tonight, we set a new goal. We will double our exports over the next 5 years, an increase that will support 2 million jobs in America. To help meet this goal, we're launching a national export initiative that will help farmers and small businesses increase their exports and reform export controls consistent with national security. We have to seek new markets aggressively, just as our competitors are. If America sits on the sidelines while other nations sign trade deals, we will lose the chance to create jobs on our shores. Realizing those benefits also means enforcing those agreements so our trading partners play by the rules. And that's why we'll continue to shape a Doha trade agreement that opens global markets, and why we will strengthen our trade relations in Asia and with key partners like South Korea and Panama and Colombia. Fourth, we need to invest in the skills and education of our people. Now, this year, we've broken through the stalemate between left and right by launching a national competition to improve our schools. And the idea here is simple. Instead of rewarding failure, we only reward success. Instead of funding the status quo, we only invest in reform. Reform that raises student achievement, inspires students to excel in math and science, and turns around failing schools that steal the future of too many young Americans, from rural communities to the inner city. In the 21st century, the best anti-poverty program around is a world-class education. And in this country, the success of our children cannot depend more on where they live than on their potential. When we renew the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, we will work with Congress to expand these reforms to all 50 states. Still, in this economy, a high school diploma no longer guarantees a good job. That's why I urge the Senate to follow the House and pass a bill that will revitalize our community colleges, which are a career pathway to the children of so many working families. To make college more affordable, this bill will finally end the unwarranted taxpayer subsidies that go to banks for student loans. Instead, let's take that money and give families a $10,000 tax credit for 4 years of college and increase Pell Grants.
And let's tell another 1 million students that when they graduate, they will be required to pay only 10% of their income on student loans. And all of their debt will be forgiven after 20 years, and forgiven after 10 years if they choose a career in public service. Because in the United States of America, no one should go broke because they chose to go to college. And by the way, it's time for colleges and universities to get serious about cutting their own costs, because they too have a responsibility to help solve this problem. Now, the price of college tuition is just one of the burdens facing the middle class. That's why last year I asked Vice President Biden to chair a task force on middle class families. That's why we're nearly doubling the child care tax credit and making it easier to save for retirement by giving access to every worker a retirement account and expanding the tax credit for those who start a nest egg. That's why we're working to lift the value of a family's single largest investment, their home. The steps we took last year to shore up the housing market have allowed millions of Americans to take out new loans and save an average of $1,500 on mortgage payments. This year, we will step up refinancing so that homeowners can move into more affordable mortgages. And it is precisely to relieve the burden on middle-class families that we still need health insurance reform. Yes, we do. Now, let's clear a few things up. I didn't choose to tackle this issue to get some legislative victory under my belt. And by now, it should be fairly obvious that I didn't take on health care because it was good politics. I took on health care because of the stories I've heard from Americans with pre-existing conditions whose lives depend on getting coverage. Patients who've been denied coverage. Families, even those with insurance, who are just one illness away from financial ruin. After nearly a century of trying, Democratic administrations, Republican administrations, we are closer than ever to bringing more security to the lives of so many Americans. The approach we've taken would protect every American from the worst practices of the insurance industry. It would give small businesses and uninsured Americans a chance to choose an affordable health care plan in a competitive market. It would require every insurance plan to cover preventive care. And by the way, I want to acknowledge our First Lady, Michelle Obama, who this year is creating a national movement to tackle the epidemic of childhood obesity and make kids healthier. Thank you, honey. In the year 2000, America had a budget surplus of over $200 billion. By the time I took office, we had a one-year deficit.
This is the Malloy Program. Back to the our coverage of the State of the Union speech.
The effects of the recession put a $3 trillion hole in our budget. All this was before I walked in the door. Just stating the facts. Now, if we had taken office in ordinary times, I would have liked nothing more than to start bringing down the deficit. But we took office amid a crisis. And our efforts to prevent a second depression have added another $1 trillion to our national debt. That, too, is a fact. I'm absolutely convinced that was the right thing to do. But families across the country are tightening their belts and making tough decisions. The federal government should do the same. So tonight, I'm proposing specific steps to pay for the $1 trillion that it took to rescue the economy last year. Starting in 2011, we are prepared to freeze government spending for 3 years. Spending related to our national security, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security will not be affected. But all other discretionary government programs will. Like any cash-strapped family, we will work within a budget to invest in what we need and sacrifice what we don't. And if I have to enforce this discipline by veto, I will. We will continue to go through the budget, line by line, page by page, to eliminate programs that we can't afford and don't work. We've already identified $20 billion in savings for next year. To help working families, we'll extend our middle-class tax cuts. But at a time of record deficits, we will not continue tax cuts for oil companies, for investment fund managers, and for those making over $250,000 a year. We just can't afford it. Now, even after paying for what we spent on my watch, we'll still face the massive deficit we had when I took office. More importantly, the cost of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security will continue to skyrocket. That's why I've called for a bipartisan fiscal commission, modeled on a proposal by Republican Judd Gregg and Democrat Ken Conrad. This can't be one of those Washington gimmicks that lets us pretend we solve a problem. The commission will have to provide a specific set of solutions by a certain deadline. Now, yesterday, the Senate blocked a bill that would have created this commission. So I'll issue an executive order that will allow us to go forward, because I refuse to pass this problem on to another generation of Americans. And when the vote comes tomorrow, the Senate should restore the pay-as-you-go law that was a big reason for why we had record surpluses in the 1990s. Now, I know that some in my own party will argue that we can't address the deficit or freeze government spending when so many are still hurting. And I agree, which is why this freeze won't take effect until next year, when the economy is stronger. That's how budgeting works. But understand, if we don't take meaningful steps to rein in our debt, it could damage our markets, increase the cost of borrowing, and jeopardize our recovery, all of which would have an even worse effect on our job growth and family incomes. From some on the right, I expect we'll hear a different argument. If we just make fewer investments in our people, extend tax cuts, including those for the wealthier Americans, eliminate more regulations, maintain the status quo on health care, our deficits will go away. The problem is, that's what we did for 8 years. That's
that's what helped us into this crisis. It's what helped lead to these deficits. We can't do it again. Rather than fight the same tired battles that have dominated Washington for decades, it's time to try something new. Let's invest in our people without leaving them a mountain of debt. Let's meet our responsibility to the citizens who sent us here. Let's try common sense. A novel concept. Now, to do that, we have to recognize that we face more than a deficit of dollars right now. We face a deficit of trust. Deep and corrosive doubts about how Washington works that have been growing for years. To close that credibility gap, we have to take action on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue to end the outsized influence of lobbyists, to do our work openly.
All right, we'll be back after the break here at the top of the hour. And once the speech is over, we'd like to hear what you've got to say. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Six and a half past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. We're listening to Barack Obama's State of the Union. And once again, as you listen to this, you got to admire the guy. I like the fact that he kicked the Supreme Court right in the teeth while acknowledging separation of powers. That was a nice move. I like that one. Wouldn't it be nice if we had two political parties that really were interested in the furtherance of this republic? Wouldn't that be great? Let's tune back in and listen.
The war is ending. And all of our troops are coming home. Tonight, all of our men and women in uniform, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and around the world, they have to know that that they have our respect, our gratitude, our full support. And just as they must have the resources they need in war, we all have a responsibility to support them when they come home. That's why we made the largest increase in investments for veterans in decades. Last year. That's why we're building a 21st century VA. And that's why Michelle has joined with Jill Biden to forge a national commitment to support military families. Now, even as we prosecute two wars, we're also confronting perhaps the greatest danger to the American people, the threat of nuclear weapons. I've embraced the vision of John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan through a strategy that reverses the spread of these weapons and seeks a world without them, to reduce our stockpiles and launches while ensuring our deterrent
The United States and Russia are completing negotiations on the farthest reaching arms control treaty in nearly two decades. And at April's Nuclear Security Summit, we will bring 44 nations together here in Washington, D.C., behind a clear goal: securing all vulnerable nuclear materials around the world in 4 years so that they never fall into the hands of terrorists. Now, these diplomatic efforts have also strengthened our hand in dealing with those nations that insist on violating international agreements in pursuit of nuclear weapons. That's why North Korea now faces increased isolation and stronger sanctions, sanctions that are being vigorously enforced. That's why the international community is more united and the Islamic Republic of Iran is more isolated. And as Iran's leaders continue to ignore their obligations, there should be no doubt they too will face growing consequences. That is a promise. That's the leadership we are providing. Engagement that advances the common security and prosperity of all people. We're working through the G20 to sustain a lasting global recovery. We're working with Muslim communities around the world to promote science and education and innovation. We have gone from a bystander to a leader in the fight against climate change. We're helping developing countries to feed themselves and continuing the fight against HIV/AIDS. And we are launching a new initiative that will give us the capacity to respond faster and more effectively to bioterrorism or an infectious disease, a plan that will counter threats at home and strengthen public health abroad. As we have for over 60 years, America takes these actions because our destiny is connected to those beyond our shores. But we also do it because it is right. That's why, as we meet here tonight, over 10,000 Americans are working with many nations to help the people of Haiti recover and rebuild. That's why we stand with the girl who yearns to go to school in Afghanistan. Why we support the human rights of the women marching through the streets of Iran. Why we advocate for the young man denied a job by corruption in Guinea. For America must always stand on the side of freedom and human dignity. Always. Abroad, America's greatest source of strength has always been our ideals. The same is true at home. We find unity in our incredible diversity, drawing on the promise enshrined in our Constitution. The notion that we're all created equal, that no matter who you are or what you look like, if you abide by the law, you should be protected by it. If you adhere to our common values, you should be treated no different than anyone else. We must continually renew this promise. My administration has a civil rights division that is once again prosecuting civil rights violations and employment discrimination. We finally strengthened... We finally strengthened our laws to protect against crimes driven by hate. This year, I will work with Congress and our military to finally repeal the law that denies gay Americans the right to serve the country they love because of who they are. It's the right thing to do. We're going to crack down on violations of equal pay laws so that women get equal pay for an equal day's work. And we should continue the work of fixing our broken immigration system to secure our borders and enforce our laws and ensure that everyone who plays by the rules can contribute to our economy and enrich our nations. In the end, it's our ideals, our values, that built America. Values that allowed us to forge a nation made up of immigrants from every corner of the globe. Values that drive our citizens still. Every day, Americans meet their responsibilities to their families and their employers. Time and again, they lend a hand to their neighbors and give back to their country. They take pride in their labor and are generous in spirit. These aren't Republican values or Democratic values that they're living by. Business values or labor values. They're American values. Unfortunately, too many of our citizens have lost faith that our biggest institutions, our corporations, our media, and yes, our government, still reflect these same values. Each of these institutions are full of honorable men and women doing important work that helps our country prosper. But each time a CEO rewards himself for failure, or a banker puts the rest of us at risk for his own selfish gain, people's doubts grow. Each time lobbyists game the system or politicians tear each other down instead of lifting this country up, we lose faith. The more that TV pundits reduce serious debates to silly arguments, big issues into sound bites, our citizens turn away. No wonder there's so much cynicism out there.
Cynicism is over. Give us a call. I'd like to hear what you got to say. 877-99-MALLOY. Past the hour, so Mr. Obama's speech is over. I would rather hear what you've got to say than offer up any opinions from this point of view, other than to say I think he hit the right notes. It's a shame that first of all that he is trying to govern with a Democratic majority that refused to bring war criminals to justice. It's a shame that he is trying to govern with an opposition party that will do nothing, has done nothing for a year, and will continue to do nothing, as an absolute show of contempt on my part for everything Republican. We will not be carrying the rebuttal by the Republicans. I think it's Mike Pence of Indiana. I frankly don't give a damn what he's got to say. There were sections of what he said tonight, sections of the speech that I thought, once again, you know, this man certainly knows how to talk the talk. And maybe what he said still has a lot of validity if this country could just pull together. But it's not going to happen in light of the Supreme Court ruling. I'm not trying to be negative here. I think I'm taking a realistic point of view. In light of who controls media in this country, the right-wing vermin will be out there tomorrow ridiculing the speech. I'm not saying that the speech doesn't need a critical review, but I'm talking about ridiculing. That's all they care about doing. The Supreme Court, of course, will not rescind its decision the other day, so corporate America is sitting back on its haunches just waiting. I do appreciate the fact that he had the strength to address the Supreme Court while they were sitting about 20 feet in front of him about the wrongness of their decision. And anyone who agrees with that decision in this country has got to be a complete fascist. You know it as well as I do. We have five fascists on the Supreme Court. I believe the five that rule in favor, I believe, are all Catholic. I've said before that six of the nine are Catholic. Does that mean anything? Well, it does. Yes, it does. You're damn right it does. To the same extent that what we started talking about before the speech began, the connection between these four people that broke into Mary Landrieu's office or tried to bug Mary Landrieu's office are connected to an organization in this country that is run mostly by Jewish Americans who are deeply connected to Israeli intelligence organizations. So do these religious affiliations mean something? Of course they do. Of course they do. You hear me bust up on fundamental Christians all the time. I'm Pentecostals and Protestants. I'm certainly not going to hold back on Catholics and Jews, who I think also are Muslims. Yes, we're trying to destroy the country. I think what I want to do here is finish up as quickly as I can with the. We'll get to your comments in just a moment. On the Supreme Court, on the State of the Union. If you want to comment, you may not want to. You may just think to hell with it. It's just usual political rhetoric. It means nothing. And we'll move on. But an hour and a half ago, right before this started, we were talking about the revelations that are circulating now through news organizations. I got this from rawstory.com. It's also, there's some stuff on Associated Press. The people who broke into or tried to bug Mary Landrieu's office are connected with an organization called the Foundation for the Defense of Liberty, which is a nest of these, the same group, for the most part, that were the project for New American Century, the ones that want war, endless war, death and destruction. They include Newt Gingrich, Joe Lieberman, William Kristol, Eric Cantor, Richard Perle, Charles Krauthammer. And before the State of the Union began, I pointed out that all of those names I just mentioned, with the exception of Newt Gingrich, are Jewish, just like I've mentioned that all six of the nine Supreme Court justices are Catholic. All five, I believe all five, I think Uncle Clarence is Catholic. I think all five of the Supreme Court justices who destroyed representative democracy last week are Catholic. So if you're offended, am I pointing out the religious inclinations of these people? I don't know what to tell you except to say tough. You can deal with it. You're a grown-up. But the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies is a right-wing front organization that is no more interested in defending democracies than is interested in, eating its own feet. What it's interested in doing is speeding up this global move toward fascism. We'll be back and explain a little bit more of that, and then we're going to take your call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. I think what we're going to do here is just take your phone calls right now. I'll get back to this Landrieu phone plot, the four men that arrested, including the Acorn pimp, James O'Keefe. All four have connections, direct connections to both the Israeli and U.S. Intelligence Committee. This may turn out to be another, in scope, and importance, another Watergate, event. Why in the world they were trying to tap the phone of Mary Landrieu is beyond me. But when you have four guys who, have connections, direct ties to two national intelligence agencies, including the so-called Acorn pimp man, then you've got to wonder what in the world's going on, right? We'll come back to that in a bit. But let's go right to your phone calls now. John is in Fayetteville, Arkansas, listening on XM. Hey, John.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
Yeah, the man is a wonderful speaker, no doubt about it. Unfortunately, I think he's drunk way too deeply from the Milton Friedman cup of poison. It's like he mentioned we need more aggressive trade. He mentioned Colombia. I know very little that Colombia can buy from us. What I do know about Colombia is they have cheap labor and an intimidated workforce that's afraid to form a union. Then he talked about exporting agricultural products, which my experience shows in my reading is that we're driving farmers out all across the world. Like in Mexico, we drive them off farms. They have to come here to look for work. So we're causing poverty by subsidizing our farm products. And then he didn't mention any kind of cost reductions by reducing the money we spend on the military. We've got 700-odd military bases around the world, some of which, like in Okinawa, the countries would be just, they're chomping at the bits to have us out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I think about it, you know, there was no mention of reinstituting any kind of sensible tax and tariff structure like we had in place when Eisenhower left office. We can't rebuild jobs here as long as Americans are competing against 25-cent labor.
Yeah. So your bottom line on the speech, you just a great speech, but no substance?
Well, the substance is more of the same, nothing new.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, John.
I appreciate
what you have to say. Eric is in Hatchog, New York. Is that right?
Hatchog,
New York. Hey, Eric.
Yeah, your show's great. I've been listening to it for years. You have a real passion that, if everyone had your passion, would be in much better shape.
Well, we'd all be having nervous breakdowns.
We might not. I don't know. Well, anyhow, I just noticed one sentence in the speech that's really, I wonder if I heard it wrong. Did you hear this? Did he actually propose lowering energy costs by opening more nuclear power plants? Did I hear that right?
I don't know if I heard that specifically, but apparently, I guess he did. Did he? I mean, I don't know. I didn't hear that part.
Oh, my God. we need more Chernobyls will reduce energy costs than, Three Mile Islands and this.
Right.
Not to mention all the nuclear waste that there's no way to get rid of it safely.
That's true.
Oh, my God. More... I would have expected. I don't know what to say. Maybe I heard wrong. That's because I was listening pretty attentively.
I doubt if you heard it wrong. If you did, I'm sure somebody will send me an email here. That whole part, I must have missed what he said about the one way or the other. So if anybody who is listening heard that about nuclear energy, give us a call. How do you feel about what he had to say in terms of the real world? Beautiful rhetoric. And like I said earlier, if we had politicians who were really interested in this country, well, first of all, we wouldn't be in the spot we're in. But I thought the points he made about the party of no, about these deadhead Republicans, I thought that point, or those several points, were absolutely correct. And I also like the way he kicked the collective rear ends of the Supreme Court while they were sitting. Just
oh, yes, I like that part, too. But the
sitting
nuclear
20,
power
yeah.
plant really took me off guard. I wasn't expecting that.
Well, this is going to be the talking point tomorrow for all the right-wing vermin on radio and television. What they're going to be saying is how President Obama is trying to set up a dictatorship by telling the Supreme Court what they can and can't do. That's how it's going to be spun tomorrow.
Oh, gosh.
Mark yeah, my word. Mark my words. That's
yeah,
how they're going to spin.
You're probably right.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're right.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Well, listen, thanks, Eric. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
Okay. You're welcome. Thanks.
All right. Take care.
Just had another caller call in to confirm that Obama did indeed mention opening new nuclear power plants along with clean coal technologies.
Well, clean coal is impossible. I mean, that technology doesn't exist. Oh, God. What's this from Jeanette? Yes. Let's threaten Iran with increasing consequences. What a fed-up world. I hate them all. Maybe someday we can ship all the people who make and use bombs and guns to another planet. At least he's working on an arms agreement with Russia. And that stupid, evil blank, no offense to female dogs, which I love, that stupid, evil blank Palin will be able to see whether they're in compliance from her house, no doubt. I'd love to see her leading those negotiations. Okay. The number here is 877-996-2556. If you want to make a comment on what you heard, come on. Come on, do it. Eric's in Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Madison. Hey, Eric. Sorry.
That's all right. First of all, I do want to say he not only said clean coal, and there is no such thing, and nuclear power plants, which have many problems. He also said more offshore drilling.
So I heard that part, yeah.
Yeah, so those three were just straight out of the Republican talking point.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very disappointed with this talk. I basically couldn't listen to it. I had to tune in and out because I'm just so tired of listening to Obama talk.
Tell me why. I'm not challenging you. I'm just curious.
The reason why is because I remember a year ago the speeches he gave, which were different, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about having a transparent government and closing Gitmo and all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, it sounds good to me. Now, I was always skeptical because at that point he had Geithner as his main guy. And
right.
So there were things that didn't sound right. But I heard him give that speech and then reverse himself on thing after thing. And I just never believed in the guy. And eventually it reached a point where I just thought, well, he giving a beautiful speech does nothing for the people of the country or the nation.
Mm-hmm.
And that basically Obama seems, I'll just say this speech, to my mind, seems like a calculated reaction to the loss of the Senate seat in Massachusetts.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I think he would have given a different speech if they had won that seat.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, would you feel any differently if there was a Congress that actually tried to govern? He mentioned that a couple of times, and he was trying to be as bipartisan as he could when he said, you know, he addressed the Democrats as well as the Republicans. And to a certain extent, I certainly understand what he was saying. There are an awful lot of Democrats in the Congress who are just useless. I think the entire Republican Party is useless. But given the fact that Obama is fairly intelligent, and I'm not sure what his agenda is, it sounded tonight like his agenda is to move the country forward. If he had two political parties that were honestly concerned about that, do you think that things would get down in this country, or?
I don't know. I mean, all I know is that we have the system, that we have the reality that we have. So, in a nutshell, of my problem with Obama is that and I noticed this in his book, The Audacity of Hope, which I read, that he longs for bipartisanship, and that suits his character. But the reality is we do not have a Republican Party. They make no bones about it. They have no intention of working with him at all.
Right.
And here, again, we have a speech that instead of saying, well, you guys have no intention of working with me, fine. I will now, we're just going to have to go ahead and, I mean, just fight.
Mm-hmm.
Fight, for God's sakes. But instead, all along, he just, instead he has to compromise with people who say they just want to destroy you.
Mm-hmm.
And then compromise again. And so we end up with our health care bill that's a total disaster. So I felt that this speech was 70% Republican, 30% Democratic Leadership Council Democrat, and almost no liberals. So it's just sort of a mush.
Yeah.
And it doesn't do anything for me. That's my reaction.
All right, Eric, thanks.
You're welcome.
I appreciate what you had to
say.
Keep
up the great work, Mike.
Okay, thanks for checking in. We're going to take a break here, as we do every hour at this time. We'll be back to continue the discussion. We have two open lines, 877-996-2556. Your take on what you heard tonight, if you were listening.
Around the campfire, it's more Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. We are inviting your phone calls about what you heard in President Obama's speech. All right? Paula's in Bayonne, New Jersey. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike.
Hi.
First of all, the queen call? Is that Obama's switchgrass?
It could be. Remember switchgrass?
Whatever
happened to all the wheat straw and switchgrass and all that stuff that was going to fuel tomorrow's whatever? I don't know. Mike.
Oh, those were the days, weren't they, Mike?
Yeah, they sure were.
I agree totally with the first caller about the speech and his impression of it is mine. I mean, I was kind of rolling my eyes and sighing heavily throughout the whole thing.
Well, tell me why. Why?
Well, some of the proposals he made about the new free trade agreement.
Right.
See, that's what we need. and then the Conrad Gregg Social Security Commission. Yeah, nothing good's going to come out of that one.
Well, nothing, period, will probably come out of it.
You know, I mean, are they going to do what Bush failed to do with Social Security? I mean, that's what worries me.
Yeah. Do you think Obama is, do you think he really, really, really is just a tool of the people who, who really want to bring an end to this republic as you and I know it?
Yeah, I do.
Do you?
I do. I mean, he said when all the populists talk about fighting back with the bankers, but look, Ben Bernanke is being reappointed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he's pushing Democratic senators not to filibuster him.
Mm-hmm.
He will push against a filibuster when it suits him. Ben Bernanke still shouldn't have a job. Tim Geithner still shouldn't have a job.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where, you know what I mean? Yeah, they're nice words, but they just ring hollow. You know? They really just ring hollow to me. And it just, you know, it was actually, I mean, at least during Bush's State of the Unions, we could laugh at him.
Right.
I mean, his delivery was just hysterical. I mean, if things weren't so serious, it would, you know.
Mm-hmm. So who was Obama directing this speech tonight?
Well, I think some of it was aimed at the liberal base, to try and win them back. And I think he's, you know, just from what I'm seeing on discussion boards and stuff, they're very happy. I mean, they're floating on a cloud now.
Well, I didn't hear anything that would appeal to a real liberal, did you? I really didn't. Maybe doing away with this insanity of gays in the military, preventing people. I mean, anyone who wants to serve in the military in these times has got to be a little bit touched in the head, as far as I'm concerned, whether they're gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile, I don't care. You got to be out of your mind to want to serve a military whose sole function right now is to destroy for corporate America. So, I mean, eliminating that barrier, I guess that would make liberals happy. I think it's a good idea. I think it's nonsense to have a rule that says because you're gay, you can't serve in the military. I mean, where does that come from? But other than that,
I think it was more the delivery.
But what?
The delivery and the Supreme Court call out.
Well, that was good. How do you explain that? The fact that.
Well, that I agree. That's the one thing that made me, I did like that.
That takes a lot of nerve.
That does take nerve. But when he talked about, Republicans obstructing and fighting, I think that was kind of like, I mean, that's not going to change anything. Everything's going to go back to what it was. They never learn. I mean, this is the only play they have.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any other, you know, their playbook is, you know, a laminated sheet of paper.
Mm-hmm. As far as that Judd Commission, I just got an email from Kathy who says the Judd Commission was defeated in the Senate a couple of days ago.
And he said he's going to do an executive order.
Oh, that's right.
To impose it.
That's right. What was it? Oh, damn, it got away from me. Oh, well. So overall, nothing really there.
More of the same.
Yeah.
Really, just more of the same. You know what I mean? It's gonna. Let's put it this way. If tomorrow we see that Timothy Geithner's resigned, that Ben Bernanke is off and they appoint somebody else, then maybe I'll feel differently, but.
Well, going from the overview like that down to the mundane, do you think that his do you agree that his remarks regarding that Supreme Court decision will be the major talking point for all the right wing maniacs tomorrow on radio and television, that Obama demonstrated that he's really I don't know, pick a word, communist, fascist, Kenyan, whatever, because he tried to overrule the Supreme Court. Can't you just hear that tomorrow?
Oh, definitely. And I mean, he did beat them up pretty badly,
and they damn well deserved it. It was kind of fun to see them sitting there with the little pouts on their faces while the President of the United States said, you know, with all due respect for separation of powers, you guys are out of your damn minds.
You know, they're definitely going to go after that because he did beat them up pretty badly.
Yeah,
and
well,
you know, so they need to, you know, pull focus from that.
Yeah, well, that's going to be one of the main talking points. It's just like when he said that the police department in where was it, in New Haven, that busted the college professor when Obama said, you know, that was a stupid thing to do, and then he wound up having to serve everybody a beer. Remember that one?
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure that what he said tonight about the Supreme Court, that's going to be all that Limbaugh and the rest of the piglets can talk
He'll
about.
He'll probably have to invite, you know, the five of them over for, like, taco night or something.
Right. All right, Paula, thanks.
Have a good night, Mike.
Okay, appreciate you checking in. All right, we want to hear from you, okay? So stick around if you're on hold. One open line. Paula's line is open, 877-996-2556. Oh, never mind. What you thought of what you heard tonight, if you listened to the State of the Union. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 6 and a half past the hour. Coming right back to your phone calls here. Your take on what you heard tonight, if you listened to the State of the Union address. A couple of emails. Wish you guys would just give me some kind of little name to use. Sand Brown? Oh, well. Subject line says, quote, clean energy, end quote. He called oil, gas, coal, all clean energy. Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. From Kathy in Green Bay, I'm sure he mentioned nuclear energy, among other things. I was listening and became irritated when he mentioned clean coal, which to me is the equivalent of magic fairy dust. I also love the education initiatives. In Wisconsin, his education secretary and our illustrious DLC governor are trying to replace the elected Milwaukee school board with someone appointed by the mayor. Wisconsin is routinely number one or number two in the nation on test scores. Why the hell should we change anything? Your caller was right. More of the same. Although he forgot to add the word crap to the end of that phrase. Kathy in Green Bay. Michael in New Mexico, regarding State of the Union, very long on cheerleading, very, very short on double entry bookkeeping, but I guess that's the way these addresses have been for a long time, will continue to be for a lot longer. But if Mr. Obama thinks he is going to do all that and reduce the deficit, he's sorely mistaken. They could glean double the projected savings just by waste reduction in the Pentagon. But that's always off limits. All in all, still a lot of trickle down to the proposals, which will come to bite him in the ass in 2012. Prairie 2 writes, I apparently missed this too. Did Obama say no more capital gains taxes for small business? According to Prairie 2, he did. Remember W saying in a speech once that he was a small business? The famous "want some wood?" quote. Bush owns a partnership in a timber clear-cutting operation. Structuring their income as capital gains is how billionaires pay only 15% income tax. Bush had wanted to make it zero. Now Obama will finish his work? The feds routinely classify small business as one with less than 500 employees and not by how many billions they make in profit. Okay. And one more thing before we get to the phone. Kat Mary in Memphis, I said what happened to switchgrass and all that stuff that W used to talk about. Kat Mary writes, the corporatists, Arbogen in this case, the corporatists want to plant acres of U.S. soil, mostly in southern states, with genetically modified organisms, GMO, cold hardy eucalyptus for use in fuels and paper. In other countries, eucalyptus has been proved to be to deplete groundwater, fuel wildfires by being highly inflammable, harbor a fungal host for deadly meningitis, and destroy local insects and thus pollinators and wildlife that feed on them. Because of the GMO additions to trees and the pesticides they absorb and so on, they ruin honest to gourd natural forest lands and hurt local sustenance and local economy and so forth. The bastards, Captain Mary Memphis. So apparently that's not dead. It's just in a more destructive mode than when Chucklenuts was president, right? Okay, back to your calls. Isatu is in Minneapolis. Hey, Isatu.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I'm just calling, and I listened to the to the speech today tonight.
Right.
I am just I love Obama, and I did volunteer, everything, but it's just like he's just working with his Republicans, and they don't want to work with him. They'll never work with him.
Mm-hmm.
All they want is for him to fail. So I don't know how long he's gonna keep doing it.
Well, let me ask you, why would they want him to fail if, like a lot of our listeners believe, and to a certain extent so do I, if he is just working the Republican agenda, why do they want him to fail?
Well, I just don't think they like him at all, and I don't know why, but, mm-hmm. I just thought, he has tried, every way, even today he really did not say, much. I think he said something about, everything about them is like, no, they're
right.
not. It's like, just like the Democrats, some of them, I was looking at Joe Lieberman. he just drives me nuts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you know, it just I think he should just just do the right thing, and I don't know. I think even if he became like a one-time president,
right.
I'm sorry, my accent. I'm from Africa. I'm really trying. with my English, but
No.
You understand what I'm saying.
You're doing fine. I think everybody understands what you're saying. The thing that puzzles me though, and I mean this. If he is doing what the Republicans would do anyway, why don't they support him?
I don't know. Maybe, maybe they just don't like him. And, I think what's frustrating is, when Bush was in the White House for, 8 years, and he did not even have, a lot of, I don't think he got, 60 votes at that time.
No.
And, this guy got everything that he wanted,
Right.
Now I'm just, he's just struggling, and I feel like whatever he's saying, and I think that has to do with the Democrats too. It's not just the Republicans.
Yeah.
It's just so sad.
Yusatu, thanks. I appreciate you checking in.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. Yeah, remember during the Bush years, there were so many Democrats who went along with, Supreme Court appointments or nominations, right? Who went totally along with John Roberts and Sammy the Fish. I don't know. Jeff is in Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. It's good to happy to get through to
hey,
you.
Hey, yo, you got to get me off the speakerphone, man.
Oh, okay. Listen. Yeah, I'm glad that I got through to you. Hello?
Yeah.
Because it somewhat anesthetized my anger I had after that speech.
Yeah?
It's weird how a difference with a year made. Before I used to get choked up listening to his speeches. Now I have nothing but sheer anger every time I listen to him. I couldn't even stay on. I had to switch around channels because, all I was hearing was, once again, he's still trying to get bipartisanship with people who don't want to work with him.
Mm-hmm.
He says that we lost a couple of seats because it could rightly maybe due to the party. No, it wasn't. It was due to him. When he was first running for office, I was not certain about him because he had two daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And the old wives' tale say that if a man has two female children, or just have female children, that means that the woman is the dominant figure in the relationship. And he was going to Washington where weakness could not be. Now, he's been showing nothing but weakness since he's been in office.
Well, wait a minute. What makes you think that if a man has two daughters, he is I don't get what you're
listen,
saying.
Mike, listen. You know how we have new medicines, but there's all these home remedies? Okay, where the old people would say, which is, if you do a little research and ask some friends and people normally, if a man has two women, that means that the woman is the more dominant figure in the relationship. His wife probably be a better president. If he has a girl and a boy, it's a 50-50. Okay?
Okay, you're saying this is like folklore. This is what old people
talk about. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Okay,
it's folklore. And I thought to myself, well, he has two girls, so he might represent, he's going into the White House where weakness,
Wait a minute. Are you saying, you're confusing me, Jeff. You're saying that because a man has a wife and two daughters, he's weak?
No, listen, I was saying, I was looking at the time when he was running for president.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at the fact that he had two girls.
Right.
And that's not necessarily, but folklore says that a lot of times if a woman has two male children, then a man is the more dominant figure. If she has two females, then the woman is the more dominant figure.
Okay. Do you believe that?
I have looked at that.
Hold on a minute, Jeff. Hold on. Let me do a break and we'll come back. Because I'm getting hung up on that, and I know you have something, different to say. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
tree in Asia. Under the sun there's a homeless man.
Renegade Talk Radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 21 past the hour. We're talking about the speech tonight. All right, back to Jeff in Phoenix. Let's move past the having daughters and a wife makes a man weak.
His passion, I wasn't surprised by that. But did you hear him? He sounds just like a Republican tonight, talking about clean coal and nuclear plant. I don't understand this guy. I am so disappointed. I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear him saying that he's going to send Joe Biden to on the Hill to change this 60 rule. I mean, he could change that himself. He could do that. He basically was just talking. He wasn't saying anything about he was going to make changes. And he's still talking about bipartisanship. I mean, we lost. It appears to me that he is not who we. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, if your health care bill is one of his signature pieces, well, if he was lost on that, he was nowhere to be found. Mm-hmm. And do you think he would go to Boston when he saw that this woman was in trouble or losing that seat? He didn't. He went one time. What was it, the day before? So it seems to me that he was sitting back waiting for that seat to be lost so the bill could be killed, because now you can say that, well, we lost the seat, now we got this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing was bizarre.
All right, Jeff, thanks. I appreciate. Go ahead.
And you know what? And the best thing that we can do, because they're trying every turn, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get out there, it's 4 years from now, and make sure that I do my best to get him reelected, because that's the only revenge I can get against these Tea Partiers and these Republicans, is to give them another 4 years so they can hang themselves.
I hear you, Jeff. Thanks. Appreciate your thoughts. John in Hollywood writes, Mike, just thought I'd shoot you a quick note. Your way to vent. My son and I are watching the State of the Union address. I got to say, in reference to our president, the guy just doesn't get it. Setting aside the relative hollowness of his speech in general, I'm sitting here completely baffled by this man's kindergarten lectures to the Republicans on cynicism, obstruction, and overall partisanship. The mind simply reels how Obama continues to make an unmitigated fool of himself in trying to appeal to the better angels and these filthy right-wingers. It's as though I'm listening to my elementary school teacher explain, now, boys and girls, play nice, please! Doesn't this man understand that these mongrels have no better angels to appeal to? That they are, in fact, heartless, soulless demons who are positively rotten to their very core. The speech should have been about kicking these bastards' asses and taking their names for what they, with the help of a certain equally dirty Democrats, have done to the country. What he should have done was verbally put those mangy vermin in a boa constrictor-like headlock, followed by an oratory clothesline right across the throat. Woo! But no! Instead, he begs and pleads for all the kiddies to play nice in the sandbox, despite the fact that the sandbox itself is filled with conscience lacking thugs who really couldn't give two tinkers damn about his parental chastising. For come tomorrow morning, they're going to retrench themselves into the dirt even deeper, making him look like an even greater fool. They will never acquiesce. They will never retreat. And they will not stop until the presidency of Barack Obama disintegrates in a pile of ashen ruin. When, oh, when will our president realize that you cannot shame these people into doing what's right for the people they represent? Instead of pimp-slapping these cretins, he once again chose the path that will most certainly ensure that nothing, I mean nothing, gets done for the American people. And that's the path of bipartisanship. Then again, maybe that's been the point all along, especially considering that the man has been bought and paid for in all its cash-and-carry glory by the very entities that put him in office, which is to say, talk a good game while keeping the Congress at each other's throats, thereby ensuring that things appear to be one way, while in reality, gridlock remains the order of the day. Nice. In the words of C-3PO, we're doomed. Anyway, thanks for letting me vent. Sincerely, John, in Tinseltown. I don't know. There's just something about the whole thing that's very, very depressing. Now, that I've had a chance to come out of the ether a little bit from rhetoric. I love rhetoric. I really do. I just love rhetoric. I love high-minded rhetoric. I love stuff that appeals to the heart and soul. Don't you? Sure you do. But coming out of the ether, you know, I realize you folks are right. You're absolutely right. I guess I'm tired of being a cynic, aren't you? I'm tired of feeling bad about the workings of my own government. I really am. But that makes me an easy candidate for making a fool of myself. I understand that. You know, that would make me a chump for somebody who could come along and say, hey, Mike, we're going to make things all better. Just vote for me. All right. We have a break here. Back to your phone calls when we return. I'm wondering, is there anybody who thinks that the, nah. All right. We'll take your calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
I haven't had a chance to mention it yet tonight, and we'll talk about it, try to talk about it more in depth tomorrow, but as most of you know, Howard Zinn died today, late this afternoon. I think he was 87. And with his passing, of course, the United States loses one of the few honest historians, Studs Terkel being the other one who also passed away not all that long ago. But with the death of these two men, Studs Terkel, I believe, was in his early 90s, and Howard Zinn in his late 80s, the country has suffered a 1-2 punch that, sadly, future generations, I just don't think, sure, all the works of these two men can be read, but they won't be around for people to hear and watch and listen to. And that's a shame. Greg writes in, Greg in Florida, formerly Wisconsin, writes, Mike, I've been remiss for quite some time. I have had no interest in politics or much of anything except some work in dealing with an estate. I did manage to listen to the speech tonight, and I agree with the listeners that have called in saying that it's a lot more rhetoric with little substance. However, I did hear two words of hope, executive order. It was in the context of this excerpt of the speech. This is what Obama said. Now, even after paying for what we spent on my watch, we still face the massive deficit we had when I took office. More importantly, the cost of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security will continue to skyrocket. That's why I've called for a bipartisan fiscal commission modeled on a proposal by Republican Judd Gregg and Democrat Kent Conrad. This can't be one of those gimmicks in Washington that lets us pretend we solved a problem. The commission will have to provide a specific set of solutions by a certain deadline. Yesterday, the Senate blocked a bill that would have created this commission, so I will issue an executive order that will allow us to go forward. Yada, yada, yada. Greg writes, that's how he needs to get things done with these rapid dogs. That and reconciliation, which I've already written about on my Examiner page, I see that as a faint sign of hope that he's waking up, but I may be wrong. Okay, yeah, regards, Greg. Yeah, sure, executive order, that's one of the ways to do it. But what is the executive executively ordering? I don't know what this Judd Gregg other guy commission about. Is it to get the fraud? If it's to investigate fraud, okay. As long as people go to jail, in other countries, when people are caught defrauding the government and the people, they're shot. They're given a quick trial. And they're taken out and shot because they have perpetrated one of the worst crimes other than rape and murder that you can perpetrate. And that is to defraud not just the people, but also the government, which is supposed to be up by and for the people over here anyway. So what happens with this commission when they find out, like, former senator from Republican senator from Tennessee, Frist, his family, one of the biggest frauds in the history of Medicare fraud. What is it? HCA, Hospital Corporation of America. I don't even remember anymore. But what happens to those people? They usually advance in the ranks of the Republican Party. If he's serious, why doesn't he issue an executive order that says if they are found to have defrauded the government and the United States, he's going to recommend that they be executed at dawn? No, that wouldn't work? Okay. All right, back to your calls. Mike's in Chicago listening on XM. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm okay.
Good. I just wanted to bring up, thank goodness, I didn't know about that, about Howard Zinn, but thank goodness for Noam Chomsky, Tom Hartman, and Keith. We've got those three, at least.
Well, the Hartman's very young.
Yeah, right. So at least we have someone from each generation. We've got Noam, we've got Tom Hartman, and then we've got Keith. So
that's true.
We've got a little backup for a while, at least.
Yeah.
Two things. The thing I wanted to hear in the speech and I didn't, and the thing that I did see in the speech that I thought was great, I would have loved to have him say, no longer are we going to pay Japan a 22% import tax on our products sent there while they pay a 2% import tax for their products here.
Right.
And with the revenue we make from the difference, we'll be able to afford health care for everyone. But, of course, you know, I'm a realist. I knew that wasn't going to happen, but it would have been nice.
Yeah, well, you know, there are a lot of solutions possible. That's one, for sure. But you and I both know that the time of solutions is gone.
Yeah.
There will be no solutions. We have some problems that appear to be intractable, but if we had a governing class that was truly interested in governing and doing the right thing, we could get over these problems. Just like Obama said tonight, you know, he's not going to give up. He believes in the country. Okay. But, one person, regardless of, you know, what the, positive thinkers tell you, one person can't do squat. It takes more than one person to get anything done unless you're just talking about your own little life. And as far as Obama getting anything done, it's just not going to happen. When he has succeeded, the next group that comes in will be Republican. I'm reasonably certain because Democrats have given up and Republicans don't care about representative government. They just care about their, you know, their crappy form of fascism. When they do come in, when they do get power, they'll get things done, but it will be all negative and it will utterly and finally seal the fate of the country. We're almost there now.
Well, you know what scares me the most is if we're in the same economic situation as we are and he gets voted out and a Republican comes in, we're just going to be circling the drain.
That's true. But maybe at that point, maybe 6 or 8 months after that occurs, maybe the American people will wake up and understand that the only thing that's going to overturn this, the only thing that's going to keep us from going fascist is armed rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
And the choice would be crystal clear. Which direction do you want to go? There have been populations in the history of the world in the last 100 years. We all know, we've all read our history, we all know about them. And when there's no resistance, then the fascists take over. When there is resistance, it either stops it cold or certainly delays it until the people can get a grip on reality again. What else is left? What else is left but armed resistance? If it gets to the point where this country, I mean, we're willing to go fight and die to protect the Afghan people, or allegedly, we know that's hog snot. We're willing to go fight and die to protect the Vietnamese people from their brothers. We know that's hog snot. We're willing to fight and die to protect the Iraqi people. We know that's hog snot. What are we going to do about protecting our own system of self-governance if it's not armed resistance?
And that's exactly what's happening, is we're going to third world countries to help them become free, and we're becoming fascist.
Well, maybe, although I doubt it, maybe the American people will wake up to that. It will not happen with an Obama administration or a Democrat, what's left of the Democratic Party. It'll have to be a Republican administration. It'll have to be people who are just wide open about the fact that they're corporatists and they're fascists. And, well, you know, like the five members of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they left no doubt whatsoever. The next thing to fall is going to be a woman's right to privacy. Count on it.
Well, you know, the only thing I think that they can do as far as going back to that Supreme Court decision that would have any kind of impact is if they say your contributions, A, have to be publicly disclosed, and you can no longer write them off. So you're not going to be getting $1 billion donations. I mean, that's the closest thing I can have to a solution. Not that it would work, but...
Yeah, it won't work because the Congress will never vote for that.
Right.
Yeah. So that's there you go. Mike, thanks, man.
Okay, Mike, real quick, could I tell you the thing I was happy to see in there? It was when Obama said, now let's clear a few things up, and he said, Republicans, I don't know what makes you think the Congress needs a supermajority of 60 instead of 51.
Right.
He says, all you're doing is proving you can block everything. It doesn't prove you're good leaders. And just then the camera panned over to John Boehner's face, and as his mouth is agape, you'd swear someone just punched him in the short and curly. It was a Kodak moment.
Yeah, I wish that would have happened. Thanks, Mike.
All right, Mike. All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Punched him in the short and curlies. Yeah. Ron's in Raleigh, North Carolina, listening online. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Brother Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Not too bad. It's been a while since I spoke to you.
Yes, it has.
One of the things that bothered me in the speech was, once again, he was saber-rattling towards Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that it seems that America wants Iran to do what we want them to do, as opposed to the agreements they already have signed with the IAEA.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to want to do that because Israel wants them to do these things. Yet Israel hasn't signed on to the nuclear nonproliferation treaties, and they've got 200 nuclear weapons.
Right.
Iran hasn't attacked anybody outside of their border in 300 years.
Right.
So when did they become insane?
Oh, man. Come on. You're using logic and rational thought. That doesn't work in this country anymore.
I mean, it's just, the thing is that I get the feeling that Israel wants to go fly another sortie and blow something up. I mean, they've blown up all the... Name one of their neighbors that they haven't flown a sortie against. And anybody else do that, and what would happen to them?
Well, yeah.
Isn't that an act of war? Isn't what we did in Yemen an act of war?
Well, I would think. Of course, the Israelis would say, look, we're only reacting. We're not acting.
Yeah, right. They reacted in Gaza when they blew those people all to hell.
Yeah. Hey, Ron, I got to go, man. Thanks.
Take care now.
All right, Ron. All right. Good to hear from you. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, See, I haven't been paying attention to this Conrad Gregg, whatever the hell it is, about Social Security, Medicaid, and Medicare. Kathy writes, why the hell will he only use an executive order to enact Republican ideas? And she sends with it a couple of links, one to Firedog Lake, one to .com, one to the Progressive Newswire. Here's what it says. Progressive leaders representing more than 50 groups will join in a news conference call on Wednesday morning to oppose Conrad and Gregg's controversial plan to create a so-called fast-track deficit commission. The Senate is preparing to vote on legislation this week by Senator Conrad and Senator Gregg to create a special commission with extraordinary powers to cut federal spending. The group declared in a letter to Congress and the White House, quote, we write in strong opposition to the proposal of Senators Conrad and Judd Gregg and others to create a deficit reduction commission that would override the normal legislative process and replace it with expedited procedures prohibiting amendments and limiting debate. If the Conrad-Gregg proposal were to become law, it could dramatically change by stealth critical benefits and services so vital to American families. Oh, Christ. And then Bruce writes, the purpose of the Gregg Commission is to balance the budget long-term for entitlement, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, etc. They could recommend taxing the rich, ha, 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 but they're going to lay down a series of cuts to benefits, probably with triggers, or at least convert it to a welfare program that's much easier to eliminate. Oh, my God. And then Irish Dave writes, Mike, no, 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 no. This Gregg Conrad thing is a wolf in sheep's clothing to loot, privatize, and rape the last vestige of the New Deal. And Irish Dave sends me a link to an article in The Nation. Okay, I haven't been paying attention. Not to that. Looting Social Security is it's from way back in February. William Greider in The Nation. All right, I'll check it out. I'll check it out for sure for my own edification. Steven's in Burbank. Hey, Steven.
Hello, Mike.
Hi.
I saw the State of the Union.
Yeah?
And there was things like health, the Supreme Court, and education.
Uh-huh.
On health, you know, he said, well, if anybody has a better idea about what to do health care, I screamed out as loud as I could, single payer for everyone,
single
expletive.
Payer. Yeah, right.
And I was waiting for the Burbank cops to show up. Apparently, I got lucky.
Yeah, well,
and,
good.
And then I was listening to Mark Thompson because I couldn't get you until your last hour. And yeah. A lot of those, he got a lot of right-wing callers complaining about how he was ragging on the Supreme Court. And in this coming election cycle, you watch, there will not be one single fight back ad from the quote Democrats unquote saying that there was a Republican Supreme Court that said the media is allowed to lie through its teeth.
Right. Sure. Sure. Of course they won't say that. Democrats never fight back.
I know.
Never.
And then education. I heard education. He could have at least tipped a hat to the social justice movement with Howard Zinn.
Right.
I heard on Pacifica that he read Howard Zinn, and all he had to do was say something cool like, let's make Howard Zinn required reading in all schools, public and private.
Yeah, that'll never happen either.
I know. Thank you for letting me rant, Mike.
All right, man. Thanks. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Tom's in Marietta, Georgia. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, bro?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm struggling here in Marietta. I was going to pull a joke on you, but Kathy convinced me not to. I was going to try and be a right-winger and convince you that there was a hell on Earth because I was brought up Catholic, and of course now I'm an atheist. But
yeah.
You know where hell really is?
Where?
Around the 1600 block of Roswell Road in Marietta, Georgia. People cannot do anything right. I mean, it is like being in the bizarro world.
Yeah.
That's not really why I called. I appreciate you letting me get that little stupid rant.
Sure.
I spent the summer in Germany, Mike, in Rhine Falls teaching.
Mm-hmm.
It was great, and I quit the Democratic Party too. About a month ago, when their renewal statement seemed like girls gone wild, wanting me to buy some more videos, and basically, democratic socialism worked very well.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
don't understand it. It's democratic, so you can vote for the people you want in, and it's socialistic, which basically means they care about people more than money.
Yeah, that,
I
that,
just
that,
don't
that's...
get where the American people are. I'm sorry, Mike, I've had a little bit too much to drink, so I don't want to...
Well, no,
If you keep me on, I'd appreciate it, but I'll just call.
Well, wait, hold on. What's going on, Tom? You're breaking up real bad. We can barely understand what you're saying. It's your phone. So let's just pass tonight. You know, we'll talk again. We will. It has nothing to do with whether or not you've had too much to drink. It's your damn phone. Thanks, Tom. Very quickly, Susan in Squim, Washington. Mike, when the president said nuclear power, clean coal, and offshore drilling, he lost me forever. What little respect I had left for the man, I waved signs for, phone banked for, marched in parades for, and voted for, is now and forever gone. Where is the man I voted for? Who took him away? Susan, Squim, Washington. Yeah. I had no idea what the Conrad Gregg thing was about, but see, why don't the Republicans love him? I don't get it. Oh, well. All right, thanks for hanging out tonight. Bad night, bad moon rising, I know. I'll see you tomorrow night, though. Maybe something wonderful will happen. Maybe we'll find out tomorrow that heading our way is a massive asteroid that has the power to wipe out everything. Maybe that will change some minds or attitudes or something. I don't know. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Individual results may